If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Weird Things podcast. Yes, before you turn off this episode, because it is yet again the shrill, nasally tone of Justin Robert Young greeting you on the Weird Things podcast and not Andrew Main, allow me to satiate you with our old pal. He's back yet again. Brian Brushwood, welcome.
You know what we ought to do is maybe kind of psych everyone out. We should play a recording of Andrew Main at the beginning doing his traditional, weirdlings and weird things or whatever. And then just, you know, record scratch like it's Ally McBeal and be like, just kidding. Yeah. It's us.
Psych, bro.
No intellectual content this episode yet again.
And if that sounded disappointing, just wait till you hear who we've brought in as a special guest. J/K, kiddos. It is your friend and mine, Jason Murphy of Spill.com. Welcome. Yeah,
Loading Bar Show. YouTube.com/ The Loading Bar. Is that what it is?
YouTube.com/ The Loading Bar. It is very much not safe for work. If you like video games and vulgarity, then that's the place for you.
But that's our core demo, baby. You're speaking to the right people.
So.
It should be pointed out, actually, Jason, part of the reason I suggested having him on the show is Jason and I actually have a long history going back, pre-scam school, back when I was pitching, working on that show on Court TV. You know, Jason and I, were co-writing a bunch of the episodes trying to set all that up.
Yes.
Whatever
happened to that? Oh, wait. Well,
yes. Okay. Nothing. We know how it all ended. You don't need to rub it in my face. I'm famous on the internet now. Screw you.
It's all I need.
Well, we will start this episode with a bit of a blast from the past, and blast will figure in very literally into this particular story. Jason, allow me to paint the picture as it was painted for us, because I want to get your reaction to it before I reveal the update to this story, which we have talked about on the podcast before. Imagine a quiet neighborhood in an Indiana suburb, kind of a Tony area. We're talking upper middle class here. When all of a sudden, a explosion rips through at least three houses, and nobody knows what happened.
Now
absolutely no leads.
Like to paint the picture, like there used to be a house there and now there's not. And it took out giant chunks of all the other houses around it. There's splinters and boards as far as the eye can see. I'll see if I can find that image that
is the Donnie Darko thing. What is that? What happened?
No, it's not Donnie Darko. Strangely,
no.
Am I going to look over and see like
an explosion that you could only survive by climbing in a fridge?
Yes, it's you can climb in a fridge to get away from it. Let's see, Indiana house.
Jones was where that reference was from. Kings of the Crystal Skull.
Let's not go that direction, please.
It's gonna break your heart
again and again.
So basically, yeah, the just a block is physically obliterated, and as we were explained this story, literally no leads, absolutely no explanation, and we had to guess what it could possibly be.
Was anyone hurt?
Yeah.
Yes, two people died.
Yeah.
Two people died. Yeah. Okay.
Only two people. Their feelings were very badly hurt when they told a joke and the house exploded, but not with laughter. It just detonated.
Exactly. And no, the idea that the joke bombed so hard and exploded two houses is not actually how this happened.
It exploded.
That's actually, that's as valid a reason as anything we've postulated on this show before.
Please, if bombing jokes caused actual explosions, then I would actually be Osama bin Laden.
Okay. Now, so you want me to try to postulate?
Yeah, just imagine if you will. Now, this will be like a Usual Suspects kind of thing. I'm going to walk with a limp behind you and pretend to be your pal when secretly I already know much more about this story than I'm letting on. But meanwhile, I let you play
the
lead.
And I'm going to talk like Benicio del Toro.
Yes.
So great. Verbal Justin. Okay.
No, exactly. So, Brian, you lead him through.
You know, like, listen, nobody knows what happened to this house, you see? And it's up to you to figure it out. Are you going to stand there or are you going to figure it out?
You know, and this is something happened with the house.
You actually look a lot like... I don't think I realized until this moment how much you look like Benicio del Toro.
It sounds like it was one heck of a block party.
For those of you listening on audio, as for this audio only podcast, Jason pulled off his mask, a la CSI Miami.
Not bad though. Maybe the pacing will play.
I dramatically took off shades for just you.
No, it was good. And listen, it sounded great on the podcast, and I'm sure it'll play great in everybody's mind. You painted an audio picture.
And said, "Hey, can you give me video?" I thought, oh, well, let me put on a hat. Yeah, I thought this was all audio. Yeah,
what I meant was, will you send me video so I can throw it in the trash so that nobody will watch it?
Absolutely. Right. Okay, all right, one of the guesses that I had.
Go ahead, Justin.
So one of the guesses that I had, just to lead you down where we had kind of gone with it, because when we first talked about it, still unexplained, mind you. That maybe there was a natural gas pocket that, you know, just, you know, for some reason went awry and exploded, which caused this gigantic thing. Brian went right to Fight Club.
Yeah. You know, that whole explanation, when the place explodes, it says, you know, the pilot light blows out slowly over the weekend. Everything fills with gas. The compressor for the refrigerator goes off and the whole thing detonates. That made sense to me.
So was it burned up or was it just like demolished or was there
explosion? The vast amount of the gas came from explosion.
That would be my assumption, would be that it was gas or some sort of, again, maybe falling frozen urine from a plane, like a lot of it.
It could be. Like, you know what? There are no wrong answers on the Weird Things podcast. Only
that's
weird
a lot
answers.
Of sauce. That's...
I mean, like a lot. You know, like a big giant, like maybe they had a bunch of Taco Cabana and it like froze now, in the clouds.
That would be like a weird, discolored version of Titanic. What? Like, to create that much, it'd be like we didn't land on the Titanic iceberg. The Titanic iceberg landed on us.
Also, the Titanic iceberg is very yellow and maybe made of human excrement.
The stickiest frozen death.
Imagine that as the call from the first officer. It's like, Captain, there's an iceberg, and it appears to be yellow and possibly human excrement.
And falling from the sky.
It's like, when are you going to stop yelling things? Because everything you yell is worse than the thing you yelled before.
So when we first told this story a couple weeks ago, I believe it was introduced as specifically like before you start thinking about it, they're like, and it's not a meth lab, right? That was like the first thing that
yes.
he said.
Yeah.
That's like that's like
normally when you see these kinds of explosions, it's because the volatile chemicals used in the production of recreational methamphetamines by the people who decide to produce recreational methamphetamines, who aren't exactly Nobel laureates,
right?
Tends
or amateurs,
to
as we'll call them.
Yes,
produce gigantic explosions.
Yeah, man. In fact, I'm looking at. Here we go. This is a picture of what the aftermath looked like. After the explosion, and apparently the other houses around it were so damaged that that they're demolishing them. It says here, yeah. Crews will begin demolition today of several homes damaged in the explosion.
Okay, you know, I've seen some frozen urine related destruction, and that is not it. That's like, not that is not like, what happened.
I can say one thing: frozen urine falling from the sky does not cause fires like I'm seeing there. This yeah. cannot be. So rule that idea out, people.
Yeah.
So do we have do we have an update on it?
That one.
Here's the update. Law enforcement officials Monday confirmed what many residents at the site of a deadly blast on the south side November 10th suspected: foul play.
Wait a minute. Not an accident.
Not an accident. Officials make clear that they think that the home explosion that killed two people and damaged 86 houses in the Richmond Hill subdivision was not an accident. Quote, Gary Coons, chief of the Indianapolis Department of Public Safety and Homeland Security, says, at this time, we have to inform you that we're turning this into a criminal homicide investigation.
This is, okay, there are two things about it. First of all, number one, this is a real-life Mad Bomber scenario. This is a guy with like a vaguely Russian accent is just like, you're too late. I blow up the world.
Unfortunately, Mel Gibson is able to safely get Danny Glover off of the toilet.
That's right. What was that, Justin?
By the way, right now there's a Russian listener in Indianapolis who's like, well, thanks, Brian.
Although, and it's amazing how fast my Russian accent became French. He's just like, blow up everything.
Boris Lepew.
Yeah, Boris Lepew is his name. No, but the second part is you're telling me like what all the locals already suspected. Like they're out walking their dogs, house blows up, and they're like, I don't know why it took you this long. We've been saying there's a Mad Bomber on the loose for days. And if they were going to get anyone, it was going to be these guys.
Would you call it a Mad Bomber? I just imagine someone dressed up like the Hamburglar.
Maybe it is the Hamburglar. He's like, if I can't have them, nobody can.
These pigs putting a stop to us. Fun and chicanery.
Yeah. Ronald sends him out whenever he needs somebody bumped.
That's his black ops is the Hamburglar.
Let me give you just a piece of information in case, of course, this is a public service. If anybody has any kind of information on this crime, there is somebody that you should go and talk to. And by the way, two rewards that you can collect if you happen to know who the Mad Bomber is. And that is from Crime Stoppers of Central Indiana. I'll give you the ATF reward, $10,000.
Hey.
What do you think the reward for the Crime Stoppers of Central Indiana for an explosion that damaged 86 houses and killed two people is?
A strong sense of self-congratulation.
And an Applebee's gift certificate.
Wait, is that really in there?
No, not really. It's $1,000. Okay. So still...
That would be amazing.
They obviously have no desire to solve this crime.
It's just one of those things where it's like, you know, you got to wonder how much, you know, like, public financing for like a basketball stadium gets. And it's like for the person who blew up 86 houses, I don't know, $1,000. We can put together $1,000.
Is that what it was? It was $1,000.
$1,000.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
Anyone else think it's a little bit odd that ever since we discussed this story, as they close in on it, all of a sudden Andrew Main becomes less and less available to join us on the podcast?
Indeed. Also, by the way, this also from the authorities. If anyone has information about a white van seen in the Richmond Hills subdivision the afternoon of November 10th, we ask that such information be communicated.
For reals? Why is it always the white van? For real. That was the same thing with the D.C. area sniper suspect. They said the words white van. Turns out it wasn't a white van, but somebody said white van, and all of a sudden everybody starts calling the authorities. They're like, I saw a white van. Must be the killer.
And suddenly every guy with a van and a bunch of candy who just wants to make some friends with some kids at the playground is getting pulled over.
It's not right. It's not right. It's not white.
So there we go. Speaking of the D.C. area sniper...
Did they say what the explosive was? I mean, I assume that they've got to be kind of tight on what they know, but like they got to know from the residue, obviously not a gas leak at this point, right?
No, I mean, they're not saying anything. They're just saying it's a homicide investigation and white van. You saw a white van? Come talk to me. Hey, you seen a white van? Talk to me. What's the problem? Maybe you make $11K.
I see. And then he turns against him. You're like, oh, I seen a blue van. You're like, did I say blue van? Now get the hell out of my face. You come back with a white van.
What do you think this is? The song Counting Blue Cars? Because it ain't. Counting white vans. One white
you did
van.
Not just drop a Dishwalla reference in 2012. Wow.
That's a Dishwalla reference.
It was a commentary on the character. Who's saying that? He's like, what, you saying I'm out of date? I'll blow up your house if you are.
Hey, JK, just kidding. I know, sensitive times. Sensitive times. Thoughts and prayers out to the fans. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, everybody, this episode is brought to you by people like you. Thank you very, very much for supporting this very podcast. If you would like to have your name read on it, head on over to weirdthings.com/sponsor, and you can have your 30-second ad reader read all up on this podcast. But you want to know what? This one comes for free. Yeah, everybody gets a taste, but it's only when one of us isn't here, because otherwise it's like, you know, you gotta pay.
It's only when the boss isn't looking. Then everybody gets a taste for free because I don't care. It's like I'm only getting paid $8 an hour.
Because me
anyway.
And Brian are the burnout employees at the TCBY treats.
The two of us are high as a kite driving the van around, and we don't care. Yes, go ahead. Take three bomb pops, kid. Do I look like this matters to me at all? You think this is what I wanted to be? I got a graduate degree in philosophy, and I'm handing out bomb pops.
I'm just trying to get blazed and listen to Dishwalla.
Hey, man, so I got a couple of news stories that we can chew on.
And go.
All right. We can talk about Mars or we could talk about apes.
M-A-R-S.
Yeah,
Mars.
How about apes on Mars?
Now, that's just speciesist, all right? We're trying to cut off that association before it even begins. Don't talk that way. So here's the thing. Mars, historically, did you ever read Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars?
Is that a Dr. Seuss book about space travel?
It was. It was about terraforming Mars by Kim Stanley, Dr. Seuss. But Kim Stanley Robinson's book, he does a really good job of giving a really practical nod to the difficulties of living in such a harsh, irradiated environment, right? Because we know that the trip out to Mars, you got a lot of irradiation from the sun. But recently, because Pathfinder I said Pathfinder. What is this, 1997? What is the new one that's on there?
Voyager.
The rover, right?
V'ger.
V'ger. Robbie.
No, what is the new one?
Steve.
It's the rover, right? The Mars.
Yeah, the Mars rover. What is the new one? Curiosity. The Mars Curiosity. Curiosity. Yeah. I said Pathfinder. I can't believe it. Curiosity has recently found out that the amount of radiation actually hitting the Martian surface is not only less than we had previously thought, but so little that, I'm showing the headline now, astronauts could survive the radiation on Mars, scientists say. So this is go ahead.
So initially, the idea was that if you went on Mars in like a regular spacesuit, you would just like disintegrate and die or succumb to radiation poisoning.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would be enough that that it would definitely take you out and to where it's like the very talk about about going to Mars, it's like, well, it's all fantasy because there's too much radiation, but not no more.
All right. So practically, this means that we are one step closer to the idea of just putting people on Mars.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you what, I know that traditionally we don't look at the chat room, but somebody just fed a very on point follow-up, which is a headline from io9, so we could talk all kinds of Martian talk here. SpaceX founder unveils plan to send 80,000 people to Mars. You ever hear of SpaceX, Justin Robert Young?
I do, and I have, and that has been kind of in our certainly our purview about SpaceX and the obsession with everything that they've done, that they have, the new rocket that they've been talking about in hushed terms would be one that could take that they would think could take people to Mars. But that's pretty amazing.
Well, it says
I misread the article. Scanning it, it said by shuttling 80,000 pioneers to the red planet. I was like, I thought it said by shuttling 80,000 prisoners to the red planet.
You know what? That's legit too. Whatever gets warm bodies.
I thought it was awesome. It's like, this is a setup for a bad sci-fi movie. Like right up there with Lockout and Red Planet.
So this is also interesting. $500,000 a trip, $500,000, which means it is not unreasonable. Let's say this is happening in 20 years. And think about, like, let's say, you know, average income is $50,000 or whatever. You would have to save. No, you'd have to save for 100 years. Well, crap. Nobody's going to go. You can save aggressively. Let's say if you're making a comfortable middle class income of, we'll say, $75,000, and you could set aside $25,000 a year, you could save up and over 15, 20 years have enough to buy your ticket to go to Mars.
Right.
Here's the thing.
Right.
There's
you're thinking about this
to do
all wrong.
On Mars.
All right. Hold on. Justin's got me dead to rights.
Thinking
go ahead.
All wrong.
All right.
Because you just said a word that would very much key into this. Ticket. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm thinking golden ticket. How many millionaires and billionaires are out there that want to sponsor a Charlie Bucket to not get on a great glass elevator like a Mook?
Sure.
No. On a rocket ship to Mars where they will live for the rest of their life. That way, dude, imagine, like, let's say, because, listen, there are people that I know and maybe platonically friends with who are in nonprofit fundraising.
Right.
And I see some of the dollar amounts that go or are talked about for certain nonprofit fundraising. This is in no way, out of the realm. For some person, some crazy person who sold their company, in Silicon Valley to be like, yeah, you want to know what? How about we don't only put on rich people in our first Martian colony?
Oh, so you're saying like somebody who's got sitting on, we'll say, a billion or whatever, dedicates $100 million to get 200 golden tickets, maybe, you know, wrapped in their fancy bottled water. It's like, what's the one consumer good? So imagine you're a hypermegal global conglomerate.
Okay, well, let's do it. I mean, Jeff Bezos would be, and he's obviously doing his own.
Yeah. Thing,
right. But obviously, Jeff Bezos of Amazon has been very, very aggressive about spending money and doing loss-leading items to get people to use Amazon. They see a value in, like, let's say the Kindle was sold, I believe, below cost. I think that some of them are still, the Kindle Fires, I believe, are still sold below cost. Now, all of a sudden, imagine every purchase on Amazon registers you for, or maybe even Prime. If you want to really
you, have to, you have to sign up for Amazon Prime. No, that makes
sense. What if you bought something really embarrassing and that was your winning ticket?
It's like, Brian Brushwood recently got a ticket to Mars for purchasing sexual lubricants.
Yeah, like he bought 37 gallons of Astroglide.
And mayonnaise.
Exactly. And two DVDs of Phineas and Ferb. And he's like, they're for my daughters. No, the DVDs.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is because it's a one-way ticket and because it's for one person, I mean, that's got to reduce, like, maybe the golden ticket has to be, like, for you and your family or up to three other people. Because it's like,
no, okay, so maybe the golden ticket in the way it was in Jimmy Wonka. Like that was
Jimmy Wonka. Jimmy Wales is Wonka. That's who it's got to be. It's got to be Jimmy Wales. A personal plea from Jimmy Wonka.
Yeah, a personal appeal. Go to Mars. I'm going to be really bored.
Go to Mars. Please.
Especially if you're a hot chick.
That's the thing. I don't want to go to Mars.
You wouldn't want to go? You don't even want to leave the house, though.
That's true, but I don't want to go to – the Wi-Fi signal on Mars is probably really bad.
Yep.
It's probably like crappy. I probably only get like Edge network
now,
on my phone.
Now, here's a good question. Okay. So let's say the journey gets settled out to where it's less than.
Right, before you finish it,
sure.
Jimmy Wonka would be a blaxploitation version of Willy Wonka.
He just says everything Willy Wonka does, but follows it with "you dig," and he's just like, "There's no way of knowing, you dig, which direction the boat's going." You feel me?
That gives new meaning to Chocolate Factory.
Is it raining? Is it snowing?
Who would be Jimmy Wonka? Who do you cast as Jimmy Wonka in the Blaxploitation version of Willy Wonka?
It's got to be.
Richard Roundtree would be the easy one.
No, I was totally thinking like Lando Calrissian. I was thinking of
Billy Dee Williams.
Yeah, having Billy Dee Williams.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah.
With me. He's like, you'll be. You dig.
In a world of pure imagination. Hello, ladies.
What we have here.
You stole fizzy lifting drink, and now they have to be washed and sterilized. You get nothing. You lose. He would make that smooth.
That's an almost seductive version of that monologue.
I know.
We've got another dead honky in the chocolate river. That's a damn shame.
Well, it really does put new meaning to when he's just like, no. Come back.
No, stop. Don't.
Yeah.
He's like, look, just because he's German, I can't say he's a Nazi, but I certainly didn't find him on our side.
Jimmy Wonka.
Jimmy Wonka. Amazing.
All right.
So here,
8,000 people to Mars. Brian, you were saying something before I interrupted.
No, this is great, though. You're always welcome to interrupt with a Jimmy Wonka story. That's a universal. Our friendship is built on one thing. So here's the question, and this is for Jason and for you. Let's assume the journey gets down to, we'll say, 6 weeks. It's so fast. It's 6 weeks at, you know, maybe a half G on the way up and then a half G on the way down. So 6 week journey. How many people need to be on Mars before you even consider going there for a trip? And is that number different for a trip just to say you did it versus a trip to to seriously consider immigrating to Mars?
I think for me, knowing how impetuous I am, if somebody came up to me today and said, you want to know what? Like, do you trade the infinite possibility of living in, you know, this element of our culture, you know, and whatever career trajectory you are on, like even if you take the most conservative element of that, do you trade that? Do you trade everything that's behind door number one, right?
Yeah.
For a trip to Mars where you know exactly what your legacy is going to be. You're going to be Justin Young, pioneer.
Like, not even as a joke. Those words, like, say that again. Just roll that around here. Justin Young,
Martian pioneer. There's like a 60% chance that I say yes.
No matter, even if you're the one, even if like just knowing that there are other people who will be following you, knowing that you're not just going up there to die alone.
No. I'm looking at this in the 80,000 proposal.
Yeah.
Like,
wow.
In looking at 80,000, it'd be like, this would definitely be the smallest town I've ever lived in. It would definitely be more claustrophobic than any situation I've ever been in my entire life. And it would be, again, final when I've previously continually, and we all have, no matter what, no matter how boxed in or depressed we might think about our lives at times, we are in a infinite possibility society.
Yeah, you know, sure, early, sure.
Americans are. If anyone's listening, this is not an American country, then sorry, you're screwed.
What's funny is the first thing I think of is like, well, sure, I could go once the kids are, you know, off to college, when the kids are like 15 or whatever. If this was happening in 12 or 15 years, I could go. But then I was like, would Mars even want me? Because at that point, I'm past my baby making prime. And what's the point of pioneers? Like, are there any old pioneers?
Mars needs internet host fertilization.
Man, could you imagine doing podcast?
I think you would have to have no kids to do it, unless you're bringing your kids. Because you're saying that you're gone forever. That,
yeah, yeah.
At 15, you know, Bobo Brushwood.
Sure.
says goodbye, Daddy, and that's it forever.
Yeah, we'll keep in touch. I'll send video postcards, let them know what's going on. I mean,
but it's Bonnie's like video postcards. Are you taking their
video
mother
postcards
and their
yes. Mars? Yes. It's going to look like. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Video postcards from Mars, it's going to look like a like watching it on a real player. Is that how you want your children to remember you?
I don't. You're like, I'm so sorry that you associate Daddy with real. It's the only way for me to get my message to you, though. I'm sorry.
How long would it take, though, to get to Mars at like 15 regulars?
Minutes. 15 minutes is the light speed communication from here to Mars.
Okay, no. How long would we take as people to get?
Oh, six. Well, we'll say 6 weeks. I think realistically,
no,
6 months.
No, realistically.
Well, right now, I think it's 6 months, right? Because they're talking about 3 years for a round trip journey.
Okay.
So realistically, we'll say 6 months. Man, that's a long ass time to be bottled up.
I mean, yes, but to go to Mars, it's Mars.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. Like, 6 months is like, okay, yeah. So, like you know, friends that have gone like, we lived in Europe for 5 years. Like, you could do that, but be in Mars.
Oh, dude, I didn't even think about it being a short-term thing, because I figured at that expense, you could write your own ticket. It's like, you know, call it $500,000 to get out there, and then, well, another $500,000 to come back if you feel like it. I would so do five years on Mars.
Okay, see, let's not think about that.
No, you're just thinking one-way tripping it.
I have a question for you.
Oh, shoot. Here it comes. All right, go ahead.
So you are Jeff Bezos after you purchase Deathbed 2, the bed that eats on Amazon. You are selected by Jeff Bezos and his crazy plan to send random people. And by the way, we find out later in like a big The Verge expose that he really just went through the most. He just got high one night and just started like searching the Amazon databases for the most embarrassing stuff possible so he could send those people to Mars. So you get sent to Mars.
Can you imagine? Hold on. Can you imagine that power? Like, you're going through the database and you're just like short circuit 2 going to Mars. Bleep. You know, just know that you're just sending earthquakes through people's lives just based on judgments about what they buy. That would be
about crappy movies they buy.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So all the girls are 15. Okay.
Magically, they're all the same age.
And you are at least 15. You are now, so what would they be? I guess
they'd be 15, 20, and 23, 24.
Okay. Now you are offered the chance to go free of cost, but it is one way possibility that as prices come down, your family could join
visit,
you,
but it would
by
be,
no
it would
means
be...
a certainty. Okay. Bonnie says, listen, it's hard enough for the girls to be without their dad. Possibly permanently, I've got to stay behind. If and when, obviously, prices come down, and as you know, the girls get older, I'll definitely join you out there. But for a period, you are out there by yourself.
Oh wow! I didn't think
of allowed to bang a Martian pioneer.
No, absolutely not. I'll tell you that much for sure.
Listen, like, bro,
are you allowed?
It doesn't count if it's on a different planet.
Let's just say that again, Jason.
Are you allowed to partake in one of Jimmy Wonka's Martian harem?
The Oompa Loompa factor.
The
Oompa Oompa.
I'm making candy bars, and you don't even know what that is.
Okay, here's the thing. I know that this would be the breaking point that would prove Brian to be a horrible father.
If I went?
No, you'd be like, well, I love you kids a lot.
But I hear once you go Martian.
There's one thing.
There's one thing I can't have on my planet. I've always thought I was a Martian sexist. I always thought I was a Martian sexual. And now it wasn't even a thing, but now it's a thing I've discovered. Well, that's what's in
you're
me.
There 10 years later. And now all of a sudden, by way of complications, maybe some space warfare, striking unions, it looks highly unlikely that Bonnie can make it out there. You're telling me you're celibate forever.
I mean, the deal is I wouldn't go if Bonnie couldn't join me. Like that's flat out. Like, no matter what a dream it is, no matter how awesome it would be to be a space pioneer, I ain't doing it alone. If it was a short-term
Bezos
thing,
calls you personally and promises you that he's going to fly Bonnie out there in 5 years.
Okay.
But you have to go now.
If 5 years is a long-ass time, though, man.
Yeah. In 5 years, and you get – and Bonnie says, okay, have all of the Martian hoo-ha you want, but then you find out you have Martian herpes.
It's space herpes.
Space herpes. You have the space herpes.
See, I mean, it's like there are already people facing that where it's like somebody goes off to make money and it is 5 years until the wife's able to arrive. And, you know, they're, I presume, celibate during that time.
All right. So you're out there. You take it. You take that deal. Then you find out Bonnie can't go.
Wow.
How long do you wait realistically?
I mean, this is, you just, oh, you're killing me. This, what is this? You're asking, what is the value of my marriage?
No, I'm just saying, like, all of a sudden you're stranded across the great distance of space.
Yeah, okay, but you could do this, you don't need to involve Mars for this story. You could just say, like, you know, your wife gets hit by a truck.
Because that's really interesting.
No, because
on a science podcast, yes, we could do that.
Because I think both of us probably know that going to Mars is very much a hot button for Brian Brushwood.
Well, that's true. All right.
Brian Brushwood, Martian pioneer.
I'll tell you what, at this point, like
that one. Chew on that one.
It's I don't even know what to tell you because it's like I can see if I truly believed. Like, you know, I could go to Mars and Bonnie would be there later on. But then if I found out Bonnie's never going to come to Mars, then at that point, my whole life becomes about getting back. And I mean,
there are no jobs on Mars to get money to come back.
By the way, this has all been an elaborate plot for Jeff Bezos to have his own reality show.
Jimmy Wonka.
Beaming it back from Mars.
Jeff Bezos and Jimmy Wonka sit there cackling maniacally as they touch their fingers together like Mr. Burns.
This is the best plan we've ever had, Jeff.
Yeah, I told you, Jimmy. I told you. And it's like, I want Jeff Bezos to be perpetually coked up. Like, that's the whole thing.
On Jimmy Wonka's special stash.
Yes.
So now you can't say, so can't go back. She's not coming. You're going to die on Mars.
That would suck. I don't know what to tell you, man. It's
be
like,
honest,
I'm not.
You always knew it was going to end that way.
I mean, my intention would be to die celibate at that point, but it's like, I'm not there. I'm not.
Maybe one night you had a few.
Oh, well, no. It's like going. It's like there are people whose spouses go to jail forever, you know, and it's like they don't have any intention of splitting up, but all of a sudden that person is
life,
not a
life
person.
Life intervenes.
Yeah. It's like that's awful.
So life intervenes, and then 5 minutes later, strikes have broken, Bonnie's coming tomorrow.
And then the awkward conversation, like, well, listen, welcome to Mars, sweetheart. There's some rules.
Oh, good God. Oh, man.
Here's Judy.
Yeah, you,
she's a Martian.
You have to introduce Bonnie to Klazmot, your new Martian offspring.
And then Bonnie would be like, I wish I had more hands to punch you in the balls more effectively.
She's like, I like this Martian gravity. When I hit you here, you fly all the way to there. Ugh.
Next topic.
All right. Hey, by the way, this episode brought to you by viewers like you.
Absolutely.
Also, I should actually, if you don't mind, I will give can I buy a plug real quick? Can I buy an advertising spot?
Yeah, buy it.
All right. Now I'll send you.
It's only $30 at weirdthings.com/sponsor.
But this goes out to thousands of people worldwide. If you think about that, this is like a CPM. That's like 20 cents a taco.
Brian, CPM for us stands for Candy Pudding Mountain, which is not real. We don't believe in it. Neither do you.
It's going to be real on Jimmy Wonka's Mars.
It is.
Candy Pudding Mountain will be replace Olympus Mons.
Yeah.
Yeah, the brothel is called Olympus.
I've now opened the Olympus Mons Venus. Jimmy Wonka.
So, real quick, let me just say, as you guys know, we launched scamstuff.com, and we've got the scam packs that are filled with 17 different collections of knickknacks and doodads that are kind of hard to find on their own. But together, you get dozens of little bits and pieces that allow you to perform over 100 effects from the award-winning series Scam School, and only $35 plus shipping. And it comes in a Brian Brushwood commemorative pint glass, and they're way cool. Now that it's an actual product and we've made them, I'm way stoked about them. Perversely, the most labor-intensive part was making a reverse set of matches, which you'll understand when you see the Quicksilver matches episode. But it's got like a placebo band and a bunch of other stuff. It's they're pretty rad. If you do want to get one for somebody who likes Scam School for Christmas, then you got to get a move on. I think we got like another week or two until we're going to run out of this current batch, and I don't think we'll get a new one until after Christmas.
Until never.
Until never. Oh. Until I go to Mars and cheat on my wife.
Let me just say this. Jeez, Brian.
oh, my God. This is exactly what this podcast is. You lead me down a primrose path. You force me into an untenable situation. You make me make the choice, and then you're disgusted by where I ended up.
Let me just say this about scamstuff.com. Number one, you could go out and get all that stuff in there separately, but you'd be wasting just a goddamn ton of time for no reason. And also, it's a great way to support, you know, an awesome human being who's done a lot for you for free. So why don't you head on over there? And also, let me just tell you this. You know, Brian, what you just heard now of like, listen, we got a bunch of this. We're going to sell it. It's all going to go at some point, and it's probably going to go sooner rather than later, probably before Christmas. But maybe we'll buy something else. Let me translate that for you. There's going to be a lot more like awesome stuff that Brian will have to deal with. And the idea of putting together, once he's put together hundreds, if not thousands, of these units, one after another, he will not be excited to continue to spend his day building these things. If you want them, get them now. N-O-W. Scamstuff.com. Buy it so you have it. Because I'll guarantee you, there's going to be a whole lot of this.
By the way, okay, now keep in mind, ostensibly, Justin is talking to the audience right now. What he's really doing is he's talking to me personally, saying, I spent 5 years handling orders for Andrew Main, and you're going to hate yourself, and you're going to want to put a bullet in your brain if you keep doing this, Brushwood.
I'm just going to say, for everybody listening, there's going to be a lot of this after everything's gone. Yeah, you know, like, we'll do them again.
It was a great experiment. It was a great.
No, yeah, we'll do them again. We'll do them again.
That's kind of uncanny, Justin.
Yeah. A lot of that. Get ready for that. A smorgasbord of that.
Right on, man. Hey, so let's talk monkeys.
Ooh.
Monkeys. What do they got that's like us? Name some things. Hit me with some comparisons. Monkeys. Okay. Apes. Chimpanzees.
A real sense of humor.
Not so much. You made that up. That's monkeyist is what you're doing right there.
Okay, so is this going to be Jason? You get to spend 5 years married to a monkey, and you don't get to see your wife. Or is this going to be one of those things? Is it my turn?
That's actually shockingly close to where this is headed. Turns out that there's a lot of things we have in common with apes, but recently, scientists have discovered something new that they did not know we had in common with our hairier brethren. And I'd love to hear you guys take some stabs at what it is.
Well, we have limbs. We have arms and legs,
right?
Like monkeys.
That's a good start.
We have eyes, mouths.
Yep.
Noses.
Yep. Genitals.
Genitals.
Yep.
That's the name of my first in command. Genitals.
General genitals.
Jimmy Wonka.
General genitals. Can you please round up the Oompa Loompas?
The Oompa Oomphas, as I call them.
Oomphas.
My ladies.
The Oompa. Donkadonkas. More like it. I'm Jimmy Wonka.
Wonka's Badonkadonkas.
Wonka's Badonkadonkas.
Welcome to Mars, ladies.
They're so juicy.
Badonka, donka, donka dee doo.
These guys are doing me. Now you can too. You can get yourself wet through at Badonka, donka, Wonka's donka dee doos.
I like that your jib, Brushwood.
All right. So what else do monkeys have?
Body hair.
Yep. Yep. Brains. We got body hair. We got body hairs. Yeah. Wait, did you say wings?
Brains.
Oh, brains.
No, I was watching a documentary about a young woman who traveled from Kansas.
Yeah, man. Okay. So
cute little vests.
The news is... The news is that apes have midlife crises.
Now, this is something we've seen, I mean, a lot of in terms of behavioral elements, like that there was a study not too long ago about their value to money, right?
Yes, yes.
That they would exchange and they had patterns like prostitution and stuff like that.
Right. Well, and they also had a general sense of fair trade, although it should be pointed out. And I can't remember if it's Rational Optimist or Abundance that says specifically there is not a single other animal besides humans. Now, there are reciprocation. Like, there'll be if one monkey gives a gift to another monkey, that other monkey will return the favor at some point down the line. They sort of remember their standing debts. But there is no animal that would ever willingly give up an item they have for an item of greater value. Like, that apparently is truly universally only the province of humans. The fact that, monkeys, what, you know, they will choose whatever, they will do whatever it takes to get the higher value object to them. You know, like a grape is worth more to them than, you know, a parsnip or celery or whatever.
Yeah.
But if they have a celery, even though they want the grape, they will. It's not in them. They can't give up the one thing that they have in order to get another one. So, but there are all kinds of experiments to see if that's, you know, as you're putting it, Justin, to see all the ways that chimpanzees and apes are similar to humans.
Now, all right, this might seem both really ignorant and misogynist.
Already, I'm in. I'll buy three,
but. I always think, and I think in popular culture, we focus more on the midlife crises of men than women.
Sure.
And I'm sure that's probably not true, but I think many would think of it in that context. Do we have any sense that there are any kind of gender lines for midlife crises in apes?
Well, the study itself says that it was based on people familiar with the apes at various zoos rating their responses and how engaged they are in their activities and what they're in here. But to your point, what does it say? Psychologist Dr. Alexander Weiss of the University of Edinburgh says, quote, you don't have the chimpanzee hitting midlife and suddenly they want a bright red sports car. So, it's, but there
they
are
start blasting REO Speedwagon and yes. Buying beer for high school kids.
It's American Beauty, but with chimps. Yeah. Can we get that movie?
You never get to tell Cheetah what to do ever again.
It says, but there may be other things they want. Like,
man, we're burning it up with the movie pitches today. This is a great movie pitch episode.
But there may be other things they want, like mating with more females or gaining access to more resources. I mean, that sounds like American Beauty. It sounds like these apes hit a point where they're tired of abusing themselves in the shower, and they just go out and start smoking dope and tearing it up with the underage females.
But Jane Goodall found a gorilla who put up a Grateful Dead poster in his garage. And started lifting weights all the time.
But now, but that said, females.
Yes.
So that would make the point that these are males that are going through the midlife.
Yeah, crisis. I think that is I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Is that real or am I just being stupid?
No. I think you're right.
This is a male thing.
I think the midlife crisis is a very male thing in general. And in fact,
cuz I mean like you see similar patterns because like for every, you know, young chippy that gets picked up by the recent male divorcee, you hear the stories of the pool boy who is seduced by the lonely housewife. By the way, I am going completely uncultural cliches here. There's no scientific value.
Like,
and this is what happens when Andrew Main isn't on the episode.
You're like, my entire outlook is shaped by articles I read on the fine journal literotica.com.
Absolutely.
Stories of the pool boy. Yeah, man. I don't know. It'd be interesting. I want to see an ape who's in the middle of having a midlife crisis. He's probably kicking all. He's beating the crap out of everyone. He's having sex with anything that'll move.
I mean, do you think that's? But that's not like, you know, the midlife crisis isn't like a necessarily physical dominance thing, is it?
Well, I mean, I took it as somebody who probably should have had one by now. It's somebody who just snaps and gets the thing he always wanted. Like somebody realizes that their time is not infinite and they have a limited resource of life left. And so they decide to make what might have seemed like rash decisions to, hurry up and get things they want now instead of perpetually waiting for.
Doesn't it kind of seem like midlife crises are just sort of like a real cover for like people who married people that they're not exactly thrilled with and just kind of want divorces?
So you just say like midlife crisis is just an excuse to be an a-hole or
no? I mean like all right. So let's say theoretically you got married to the wrong person. Let's say theoretically that happens in life, and I'm talking to people who are in very very happy marriages. I'm not talking to you. I'm saying theoretically,
$500,000 can fix that, and you will go to Mars.
Yes. I mean, because like, we've
just
all been to weddings
with Jimmy Wonka.
We've all been to weddings where we're just like, wow, this is not going to last.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, people always – boy, this is turning into like dude's night out here. But it's like everyone always bemoans the divorce rate. But universally, I think of every couple I know who got divorced and like everyone's better off
happier
for it. Yeah. I'm like really glad you guys split up and are now with somebody right for you.
Yeah. So let's say, I mean, but it just kind of seems like if somebody married the wrong person and now they're kind of very much realizing that, or let's say that like they had kids, maybe the kid's a little bit older, and now they're like, well, what am I doing here?
Sure.
Like we lump all that kind of behavior of like, you know what? I am going to buy the sports car that I wanted and you nagged me about because you wanted to do something else. And you want to know what? I'm going to sleep with somebody that I very much find attractive. And that happens to be somebody 20 years younger than me.
Oh,
like
God.
That we lump all that into like midlife crisis. Like it's a medical thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
It's just a correction to a problem that was created 20 years prior that everybody knew was a mistake.
Hypothetically, let's say that that is the case. How would one go about getting some sort of doctor's note or something like that?
like theoretically, something that would convince both of the ladies and maybe your boss, specifically made out to a certain name. Who would I call for that?
I'm having somebody's a midlife crisis.
I got a note from a doctor.
Hey, Romano.
Says here I got to go to Mars to cheat.
Doesn't count if you do it with a rover.
So does it say in there what any more examples of the typical behavior in the apes?
Unfortunately, this is every so often, Jason, I read a headline and I just assume that I get the rest of the story. And then all of a sudden, live on the air, I'm forced to admit that I didn't actually read the rest of the article. However, I will
very unlike you.
I will quote this. Robin Dunbar, professor of evolutionary psychology at Oxford, says, quote, "What can produce a sense of well-being or contentedness that varies across the lifespan like this? It's hard to see anything in an ape's life that would have that sort of pattern that they would cogitate about. They're not particularly good at seeing far ahead in the future. That's one of the big differences between them and us. That is a skeptical analysis of the findings. So, fine. If you wanted to take all the air out of that headline that I was so proud to report, then you just did it, sir. Thanks.
Well, it's like, you know, what, suddenly the ape is sitting there on a branch or whatever, and he's like, God, I've really spent the last 15 years just throwing my poop at people. This is... I've just been masturbating and throwing my poop. I gotta change.
There's more to life than this. Is this all there is?
Exactly.
I want so bad to see Monkey American Beauty. I want a slow panning shot on the back of a monkey who appears to be touching himself and says, "This is the highlight of my day. Later, I'll fling poo," and then it circles around. And maybe like,
that, that's the weird gibbon next door that's always staring at the paper bag.
There's just some monkey who's got like Nazi China. Sorry, what were you saying?
Let's do picks.
Yeah, dude. Let's talk about it. Do you have one? I have one.
I got a quick one. There's been a book I've been reading on and off. It isn't exactly a science pick, but I've been reading it on the planes. It's Bill Simmons' Book of Basketball. Very, very good. If you are a fan of the sport of basketball, it's insanely comprehensive. He has a very distinct kind of style of writing, but he's certainly somebody that anybody who's produced online, who likes writing online, really should learn yourself up about Bill Simmons, because he's a fantastic internet success story. So check that out, The Book of Basketball by Bill Simmons.
Dude, guess look what I'm doing. Get ready. Here it comes. You ready?
Oh, ready? Yeah. You better get that in your life,
click.
Son.
I'm buying right now live on Audible. Thanks. I am buying normally $31, only one credit with Audible. Why are we not sponsored by Audible?
I don't know.
That's because we're lazy and bad people. But I'm buying book one of The Heir to the Empire. I have to type my password again.
You should probably do that on air.
Yeah, no, I should do it.
All right, so you were buying. I implored you last week to get off.
Let's pull back the curtain a bit. You didn't just implore me on the air. You didn't just implore the buyer's home. Like we got off the phone, and I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? That was a good show. You're like, no, seriously, Brian, you are a bad person if you don't buy this audiobook, even though you've read these books before. So that's
who,
what's
who
happening.
Reads them? Who's the
Mark
the voice
Thompson,
actor?
I believe. Check that because you have the thing up now, Brian. But I believe it's Mark Thompson, and he is stellar. Like, not only does a great job of doing the voices that are familiar that we know and love, including Lando Calrissian,
Jimmy Wonka,
but he's fantastic at it. The voices are exactly in that sweet spot between parody of the actors and kind of their own. Sort of feeling to them, and really, what's best about it is that there are some podcasts that I prefer in general to have them be dry, just like the narration, and that's it. Because you know, in general, when it comes to sound effects, they're just not great.
I'm trying to see if there's that for a living. I'm trying to see if I can actually play a clip of it on here. Oh, here's a sample right here.
It would have been inconceivable for a man as young as Tichelle to serve as a bridge officer aboard a ship like the Chimera. No.
Dude, can you hear the ship noise in the background?
Yeah, exactly. So they'll do audio beds like the ship noise, or if they're in a cafe, you'll hear background like alien like talking and everything. But you get those precious moments, which are so few, and you don't realize it. The reason why we went to see the prequels is that you get these moments where you're into the story, you're so dialed in, and then you hear like the Empire March, or you hear those familiar John Williams swells, and you're just like, "This is Star Wars. I just want to smash it against my head. I love it."
I only listen to audiobooks that are performed by Michael Winslow of Police Academy fame.
The bleeps, the sweeps, and the creeps. It's amazing. Well, I am excited to do it, but my pick actually is not a book or a television show. It's something you've never heard of before. And forgive
me. Unless you listened to the podcast last week.
Wait, did I already mention it? I already did mention it last week.
Yeah.
But I finished the Walking Dead video game from Telltale Studios, and cried like a baby at the end. And this is significant because, like, 4 years I have mentioned that it's easy to get people scared. It's easy to get people angry and annoyed, and it's less easy to get people to laugh. But as is evidence of a maturing medium, you know, if you look at the history of film as a medium, early on it's just spectacle, like, here's a sunrise, isn't it neat, you're looking at this stuff, and then you saw train
pulls into station,
exactly, right? And then you saw, and of course porn instantly, right? But then you also have stuff like you have the Nosferatu, you have the scary stuff early on, Boris Karloff and that era. But then there's comedies, of course, the Three Stooges, but then you develop a point where it's like you care deeply about these narratives. And that's part of the reason, like, Gone with the Wind is such an important movie, because you get swept up in these characters from so long ago. And we're seeing the same thing happen with storytelling in video games. And they pulled it off. I've said, like, the Holy Grail is I want a video game to give me characters and situations I care deeply enough about that when something tragic happens, I actually cry. And it's never happened until this video game. And I'm not going to spoil the end. Let me
just lay out for people who didn't listen to last week's podcast. And I don't know if we went into it. But this is much more of a story. This is a story-driven game. Far more. It's more about talking to people than. Is there even like a hack and slash element of killing zombies?
There's every so often. There's a brief moment, like you finally have a rifle and enough ammo to take out this approaching horde of zombies. And it's not a Twitch game. It's not like aim and click matters, but it's like, you know, you click on each of their heads and you shoot them, and so you get the satisfaction of killing the bad guys. But mainly,
but this is moving forward as a storytelling narrative.
Correct.
For which you are engrossed in. And this was something really that we talked a lot about. Go ahead, Jason.
I was going to say that Telltale Games really seems to be filling the niche left by the diminished market of adventure games like, you know, Sierra and LucasArts.
Sure.
And stuff like that, since they got out of the business around the time of, like, Grim Fandango and what have you, especially the latter adventure games, you know, it's really about the characters and the things that they go through and not so much about your video game skills.
No,
which
not,
I think
not
is a smart choice, because Walking Dead has a mass appeal.
Well, and here's what's great about it is Walking Dead, whether it's the television show or the comic book, has always been, that brand has been about agonizing choices and about putting people in situations where they're forced to make excruciating decisions. And the difference is, in a video game, it really matters when you're the one making these decisions, and you have a very short time to do so. You'll watch the question come up, and everyone will turn to you, and you have 15 seconds to decide what to say, or even less, you know, 5 seconds to decide what to say.
And that's, you were saying that that is the key to this game, is that you can answer, or no, you are made to answer everything, but you can also remain silent. And so you just get 15 seconds to either answer or not answer. So if you don't answer, then you're just mute Joe,
and there are,
who
there
just
are,
doesn't answer questions.
There are times, especially when probing questions come from this 11-year-old girl that you're protecting, and I'm not prepared to answer them, that I did. I just didn't say anything, and it creates a moment. You know, not answering is an answer. I, again, not going to spoil the ending, but the ending did a fantastic job of being an utter surprise to me, and utterly brutal and tender and sweet in how it wrapped things up. And I really look forward to hearing from anybody who, on our recommendation, goes and checks out the game. Because I think,
you know,
and you don't need to have, has not, this story has nothing to do with the story that's told on the television show, nothing to do with the story that's told in the comic book. It's set in the same world, and as the prequel should have been, introduces a brand new cast of characters to make us care deeply about.
Now, the thing that kind of came to my mind the more this has gotten traction is when we were doing Game On, there was a game that came out and we reviewed in a, of course, we couldn't seriously talk about it, so we talked about it and we did a Daphne sketch about it. But it was an indie game called Dear Esther. And
right.
That was, at the time, the big conversation was, here's a game that literally has no points, no objectives, and it is an immersive story interactively.
Right. There's no moment where it requires any skill to advance to the next part. All you do is literally walk from story point to story point.
Yeah, and you have free range of where you want to go, and as you kind of hit these points, it explains more and more of the game, more and more of the plot, and eventually you get a resolution to that. And there was a lot of Sturm and...
Oh, hang on. I don't know if I lost Justin.
You know, I think...
Sorry, we lost you there for a second. We heard there was a lot of... Go ahead.
Sturm and Drang about... whether or not that was it was a video game. Is it the future of video games? Is it an art project? And this seems like an evolution out of that idea. Not to say that they took that idea and ran with it, but that, like, hey, listen, here's something that doesn't pretend to, that doesn't, it's not like there's a good story along with a twitchy shooter, a game, for which Walking Dead very much could be. You could take that property and just make it.
And there are times when it's a little bit tedious and you realize that it's been 30 minutes and all you've done is essentially hit spacebar to advance the conversation. But luckily the writing is good enough that during those things you don't begrudge it and you're not angry about it.
And that's been the consensus.
Yeah.
How much input does Kirkman have into the writing of it?
As I understand it, very little. It's mainly the story's supervisor is Gary Whitta, but it was written by two of the guys over at Telltale Games. And somebody called me out. I keep wanting to say screw you, Gary Whitta, you made me cry. But really, it is the two writers at Telltale Games that made it happen. And I apologize that I don't remember either of their names, but they're both worth following on Twitter.
So have you ever come close, either one of you, to crying at a video game?
There, the closest before this was getting kind of choked up when Alex's dad dies in, spoiler alert, in Half-Life 2 Episode 2.
Half-Life 2.
Yeah. Half-Life 2 Episode 2, which, by the way, though, I just realized that was half a decade ago that the episodes started coming out. And the whole point of them doing Half-Life 2 episodes was that they could create them every 6 months and start making them come out for super fast. But it was amazing.
There was a really sticky point for me playing Echo the Dolphin, in which just the waterworks. all right, Jason, you got a pick? You don't have to have a pick, but if you have something...
Yeah, what are you up to? Like, what are you watching that you dig right now? It could be something you watch, something you read, whatever you wish everyone else is
okay.
doing.
You know what? Actually, I do. I have something, and if you're, if you're a comic fan right now, you know this already. It has consistently been one of, if not the best comic being published right now for the last year plus a few months, and that's Mark Waid's Daredevil.
No kidding.
Yeah, and he has, for the last couple of years, Daredevil has been, it was Brian Michael Bendis who wrote it, and it was very dark and noirish and gritty, and then it was Ed Brubaker, and it was still dark and noirish and gritty, and they just put Matt Murdock through the ringer. They made him just this really miserable, just beleaguered, he should have killed himself.
Well, that's
really
good, because he doesn't have enough already going wrong in his life being a lawyer.
Right.
Blind.
Yeah, but Mark Waid went and he added kind of some of the whimsy to it, and a lot of the issues are almost done in one, and you've got a really a wisecracking Daredevil who is not wisecracking in the way like, say, Peter Parker does as Spider-Man. And he doesn't have these overly long stories. They usually wrap up within like an issue or two. And he's really he's making Daredevil. He took it a different direction and yet still remained true without completely reinventing the character. He didn't betray anything that came before it. It's fun. It's kind of swashbuckling. There's a lot of mystery. And it's just got great characterizations to it. It is really, really good. And you don't really have to be a rabid Marvel fan or Daredevil fan to get what's going on.
And so if somebody like just knows the basics of Daredevil, this is what issue would you say they should just jump right in at?
Well, it's only at like issue 14 or 15 or something like that. And there are a couple of trades out right now that you can get for, $15 or something.
Right.
So pick it up from the first one. There you could really jump on just about anywhere, because, again, the arc don't go, you know, beyond like two or three issues. But yeah, it's really straightforward. And each one of them is kicked off with a tabloid page that kind of explains to you what's been going on.
The setup,
you
know, the setup, the sensationalist view from the outside.
Yeah, yeah, and it's all written like a tabloid section of the Daily Bugle or something like that, you know. But it's really good because he's you know, he's like, well, everyone knows Matt Murdock is Daredevil, but he just keeps denying it, and he said, oh no, that was just internet misinformation, and he's actually kind of sort of pulling it off. So he's at this point where the public knows he's Daredevil, but they're like, he's starting to make everyone think, well, okay, maybe not, you know.
Well, that's great.
It's really, really clever.
Right on, man.
There we go. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've talked about not only the greatest exploding neighborhood in the history of Indianapolis, but also what balding men
$1,000
and apes have in common, and most importantly, that Brian would totally cheat on his wife if he got to Mars.
You're killing me. You're killing me.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you very, very much to Loading Bar and Spill.com's Jason Murphy.
This is why I can't have nice things.
It's been
but
weird.
You can have space herpes.
Space herpes.
What do we have here?
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor, and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.